Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. Living creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings, take care, to care.
Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Hey, 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 hey
Seminole stomp dance song. Ashkwe, greetings and welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices on Global Community Radio, Radio for Peace International. In today's program, we have the pleasure to share a conversation with two very special people, Andy and Helene Buster. Mr. Buster serves as a tribal judge for his Miccosukee Tribal Nation and works in social health care on the reservation. His wife, Helene, a professional nurse, directs a health clinic for her Florida Seminole community. Yad Kiddushin Native Center is honored to have Andy and Helene as members of our advisory council. I am also grateful that they are longtime close personal friends. Throughout Pahokee, Florida Everglades Indian Country, Andy and Helene are highly regarded for their community service. One afternoon, while visiting in their home, we sat down together with a small tape recorder to share some thoughts with each other. I would like to again thank my dear friends for all the good things they do, and again thank them for sharing some comments here on Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Our next guest on Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices is Helene Buster, a Seminole nurse and director of one of the Seminole health clinics on the reservation. In addition, Helene is a very respected community member, and I feel that she's very concerned for the well-being not only of tribal members, but also that of the health of the Florida Everglades. I consider Helene to be a role model, not just for Native women, but for everyone everywhere, and I wish there were more people like Helene Buster. I'd like to thank you for being here on Wolf Mountain Native Radio.
Thank you for inviting me. My name is Helene Buster, and I am a Seminole tribal member and of the Panther Clan. As Ornez was saying, I am a nurse, but more importantly, I think in my life is I'm a recovering alcoholic and a drug addict. For 13 years, I've been recovering and found that this is where my life is. Before I only existed, I didn't have a life. Today, because of my recovery, I do have a life, and I'm very happy in it. A lot of changes happened in my life in the last 13 years due to my recovery, and I'm very grateful to my higher power for that. I've been a nurse for 10 years. Started out as an LPN. Actually, probably 13 years, but I started out as an LPN because of my background, my records. I did not think I would be able to be licensed as a nurse because I was a felon. You know, what I was doing when I was out drinking and drugging, and in those years, you know, I caused myself a lot of problems. And when I decided that I needed to do something with my life other than get drunk and leave my children everywhere except with me, you know, that I made that decision, and with that decision I decided to go back to school and become a nurse. And I became an LPN because I didn't know if the state would license me, and I had to petition to the state board and take an attorney with me and all this, and they allowed me to get my license. And once I was a license, I worked as an LPN for 1 year and then went back to school to get my RN because that's where I really wanted to be. And with that, I've been working with my tribe ever since I've been a nurse for 10 years. And in that, I've learned a lot. You know, not only do we have the problems of drug and alcohol abuse and domestic violence, but we have a lot of hypertension and diabetes. And that's where my interest lies, not only in the substance abuse, because I do a lot of work there too, but the diabetes is one of the main things that I really work on, and work personally with people on a one-on-one basis to help them recognize their disease. Because just like alcoholism and drug abuse, if you don't honor it as a disease and something that you have to live with for the rest of your life, you know, you'll never be able to deal with it or handle it. So, you know, that's what I try to tell people, that you have to accept that this is something that is yours. You know, whether you want it or not, you have it, and it's there forever. And once you can accept that, then you can learn to live with it and do the things that you need to have a productive life and a good life. You can have a good life with diabetes. It just depends on whether you want to or not, and what you want to do with that disease and its process.
Helene, as you know, one of the greatest concerns of our Yad Kiddushin Native Center is the well-being of our future generations, our concern for the next generation of young people to appreciate and know our cultural history, our languages, our arts, our ways of life. And yet in the modern times, many of our young people both on the reservation and in urban areas are being sucked into the so-called mainstream society. There's a lot of alcoholism, drug abuse, gangs, and just all the kind of distractions from our traditional ways. And I'm very glad that at least here, the Seminole and Miccosukee tribal nations, a culture still seems to be somewhat strong. You and Andy speak in your language, which I think is a real blessing for the young people. Do you have concern for the future generations, and just share some thoughts about that?
Our children, I feel like they have an identity problem. And they see what the world is. They watch TV. They go out to public schools. They interact in, you know, outside activities and things like that. They're away from the reservations, and they see, you know, what everybody else is doing and what they're, and they really don't have an identity of their own, because we as parents and in a changing time ourselves haven't really, you know, valued our traditions and our culture enough to make sure that our children understand, you know, why we do the things that we do and why we were taught the things that we were taught. We didn't pass it on to our children, so they know they're natives, you know, they know that they have a different tradition, a different culture than most people, but they don't really know it to be able to identify with it. And so therefore they're out there searching and trying to identify with other people and their identities that they have, you know, because the black people seem to really know who they are and what, you know, what they want, you know. And so and our youth go after that, you know, and not just the blacks, but all the other cultures, you know. That's just an example that I'm using because, you know, they grow up and they know, you know, they're taught that, you know, they're from Africa and that, you know, this is the way they were brought here and what happened and what happened and why they should stand up for their rights and things like that. The majority of our children in our tribe, I feel like, don't even know about the Seminole Wars. They can't relate to how and why we're here in Florida, why we're here in the swamps, you know. This was land that nobody wanted, that we were, you know, we ran down here to hide, you know, from, to survive, you know. And we ended up down here, and lo and behold, everybody wants this land now. But, you know, they don't understand that. They don't know, you know, about the Seminole Wars that we had and what our forefathers had to go through so that we can have the things that we have today. And because of casinos and tax-free cigarettes and things like that, we have, you know, luxuries that our forefathers never had. And it was their dream for us, and we have that dream. We're living that dream today. But if our children don't get their identities, if we don't do something to help our children to find out who they are, then there's going to be nothing for the future generations. It's going to stop. There's not going to be any tradition. There's not going to be any language. And we keep saying that over and over, and we're teaching our children now in school, you know, and trying to give them, you know, a base to go on. But like when I was first married, I was married to another Miccosukee man, and he spoke his language and I spoke my language, and we didn't understand each other's language. So our main language was English at home. So we have two daughters that doesn't speak either language. If we were smart, our daughters should be speaking both language plus English, but we didn't do it that way. Our daughters learned English, and my oldest daughter is always very upset with me because she wants to know the language, and my grandchildren are learning the language, and so she has to, you know, try to learn through them. But it's, you know, it was our place as parents to put these traditions and culture into their lives, and we didn't. And so now we have lost children that are out searching, and the only thing that they're finding is drugs and alcohol out there. And to fill that void, that empty spot that they have, that's the way I feel about it. And so I feel a big responsibility today, not only as a Native person, but as a recovering person, you know, in our communities, to do whatever I can to try to help these children and adults in our communities, you know, try to see, you know, a different way of life, you know, that you know, alcohol and drugs are not the answer. You know, that there's other things in this life that are more important than that, but you have to have a reason to want to find it. And I think that our people are still out there searching. And I don't know, you know, we can just keep doing what we're doing, and it seems like a slow process, and that, you know, not that many people really want it, but we have to continue to do our work. And you know, and I tell Andy all the time, I said, if we can help only one person a year, that's worth everything that we do all year long. If we can help one person to find sobriety, to find a higher power in their life and get some spirituality, because that's the most important thing. Once you can get a little bit of that spirituality in your life, yes, and you can feel that, then you're on a different journey than where you were.
You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices on Global Community Radio. My guest today is Helene Buster, a very close personal friend of mine, a member of the Seminole Tribal Nation here in what's now called Florida. And I'm in her home, the Everglades, with her fine husband, my good friend too, Andy Buster. And Helene, the next question, comment area that I want to talk about is a concern that I have expressed many times on this program, and that is Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices tries to educate the public to get a better and deeper appreciation and understanding of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. And one of the real strong misstandings and misperceptions about our culture is the image of women, Native women, and some of that obviously has to do with how the media, such as Hollywood movies and TV, have portrayed women as so-called squaw and second class. And in fact, in history, many of our Native nations all over the world are headed by our clan mothers, our governments, our matriarchies, and women play an equal and important role in place in Native society, and we're very loved and honored and appreciated because as men we know they are the keepers of our future generations. And in fact, it's very upsetting to me that one of the modern diseases we are suffering in Indian country is the disrespect and mistreatment of women in our societies. I guess you call it spousal abuse. That's a whole area of you know, health. Would you talk a little bit about the historical role of women in Seminole society and some of the contemporary problems Native women are facing, such as spousal abuse?
Okay, thank you. Yeah, you know, women in our tribe are I don't know how to say this. They are the ones that carry the clan, and the clan is the most important thing in our tribe. Our clan is what makes us, it identifies who we are and what kind of people we're from, the background. My clan is the Panther clan, and we're the medicine keeper. You know, our families are, we carry the medicine at our religious ceremonies. You know, our people, the Panther clan, are the ones that takes care of the medicines and kind of pretty much runs the show in the ceremonies. And so the women are the way that the clans are carried on. They don't get it from the father, they don't get it from anybody, they get their clans from their mother. And one of the things that are happening today is that our men are marrying outside of our tribes, and if they marry another Native clan, Native tribe, then they may get a clan from that tribe, but it really doesn't, you know, really doesn't mean anything to us as Seminoles, because we have the 8 clans, and that's what our tribe is run on. Our tradition and cultures are based on those 8 clans. So, you know, women play a very important role in our tribes, even though our women do not really lead. You know, they're not in high positions in our tribe. They're the backbones, and they know that, you know. And I always kind of laugh and say, in today's world, you know, the men are up there leading, they're being our leaders, but, you know, we're just letting them, because, you know, we let them think they're leading us, because it's the women that really control what is happening, you know. And we need to sometimes really stop and look at what's going on, and, you know, the men, whether go back to their clan and find out what their clan mothers and what their clan are saying that needs to be done, and, you know, and follow those things, because our tribe is, like, right now, in my mind, going to pots because we're going away from our traditions. We're not following what we're supposed to and doing what our mothers and our grandmothers and all had taught us to do and how to carry on as human beings. And that's what's taught through our clans, is how we're supposed to present ourselves, the kind of people that we're supposed to be. And that's very important. Clans don't marry same clan. You know, that's like marrying your brother or your sister. You know, you don't marry, you have to marry outside of your clans. And because we don't follow those traditions today, is the reason that our people say that things are going wrong, and you know, sisters and brothers are sleeping together and having children together because they're marrying to the same clans, and then you get things like the domestic violence and things. But, you know, really, it doesn't matter what clan you are or anything. Domestic violence and things of that nature are not right. You know, men shouldn't hit on women, and women shouldn't really hit on men, you know, because some women are bigger than men, you know, and you look at it as being unfair when a man beats on a woman. You think, you know, what chance does a woman have? But sometimes the roles are reversed, and you have that domestic violence where the woman is the perpetrator, you know, and we need to look at that too, because a lot of that goes on in our tribe, and I see that, you know, and especially if the man is not a tribal person, you know, he's more of a target, you know, and especially when there's substance abuse going on, it really, really becomes a problem. I don't know, I work with a lot of people, and not only in the health, but in the recovery world. We work with a lot of people that are in this situation, and, you know, the only thing that I feel like, being in that situation myself in a previous marriage and a relationship of being abused, you know, I couldn't understand when I was there why the things were going on, you know, why I was being beat. You know, I'd stay home, I'd do the things that I did, you know, and I took blame for everything that did happen to me. You know, it was my fault if I'd done this better, if I did that better. But today I know that that's not true. Yeah. And so I tried to share that with other people, with the other women in my community that are going through that, that they don't have to go through that, you know. I went through 13 years of the domestic violence, you know, and it was like nobody could understand, and you really can't see it until you're out of it. When you're in that situation, you're there, and you feel like there's no way out, but there is, you know. And it took me a lot of years to find out there was a way out, and once I made that decision to get out, then I could see it. But it wasn't until I decided that I had to do something, or I was going to die, yes, or I was going to be killed, that I had to get out of there. Then I could understand and I could see where I've been. You know, I stayed in that relationship because I thought I was doing the right thing. I didn't have a father growing up. And that's another thing, you know, the men in our society, the purpose that they have is to, you know, is to have children, to produce children. And that's it. And if they didn't stay with the family, then that was okay, because, you know, the women are the ones that pass on the clan and everything. The women's family is the one that teach the children the traditions and the culture. It doesn't come from the father's side, it comes from the mother's side. So the father's only real job is to produce the child, you know, and that's it. And the mother, you know, she conceives, she has it, she raised the family, that family, the Panther clan or whatever the clan is the family that raises that one. And his family doesn't really have that much to do with them, you know. So, I mean, there's been instances like when the mother died and the father, you know, was asked just to leave the camp because he really had no business there. Yes. You know, it wasn't, he didn't have anything to do with the children. Yes. So, but, you know, it's just so much has gone on in our times, and so much has changed. And it's not that it's really changed. We've changed it, you know, by not learning the culture and tradition. And I think, to me, that's the bottom line, is that because if we go back to what our teachings are, our traditions and our culture are, that our lives would change and that we would be back on the right path. Now we're trying to live another society's life, you know, and that's what's killing us. Yes. It's because we learn other things, you know. Before, there wasn't jealousy, you know, because you knew that, you know, the man was there to do a certain thing, and then once that was done, he was, you know, he could go and do it. You know, you didn't have that kind of commitment where you would get jealous and, you know, you expect this man to be there forever and ever and do all this stuff. You know, to me, I'm thinking maybe that was the right way to go. If you didn't have that person, you had your family, you know, and that was who was going to help you raise your family. Your clan family and your own immediate family, they're the ones that was going to be there and to help you. And you didn't need, you know, that outside, which is what another clan is to us, is an outside person, you know. And since he never does, you know, he never does any of the teaching or anything. So, but if we went back to what our you know, traditions and culture was, I think that probably we wouldn't have the problems that we have today, but we do have them. And, you know, today I feel like it's all drug and alcohol related. You know, people can't handle their booze, they can't handle their drugs, or they get too much and they, you know, want more. Yeah, and our the money is, you know, is it, we're on in a lot different place today than we were 10 years ago, you know, financially. You know, so we have all kind of things that are going on, and people don't know how to handle it. It's like newfound money, you know, and everybody's got all this stuff they want to buy, they got to do, and all this stuff, and it's not causing any happiness that I have been able to see. Yes. It's causing a lot of problems in our lives because our people don't know how to handle it. Yes. We were better off and much happier when we didn't have the things that we have today.
Her hands, Indian woman, the strength of her people.
you. When you were talking earlier in the broadcast, you mentioned the word spirituality, which is very important to me. And as a young traditional Native person, I try to follow the Red Road. And to me, the state of health has a lot to do with really your own spirituality, your own connection to, we say in my language, to Ketantue, the Creator, the Great Spirit, and all the relations Ginawantakwazin. And so by the time someone is suffering from a disease, in many cases that's a physical manifestation of your spirit being out of balance. And I'm wondering if you'd talk a little bit about the importance of developing your spirit, because I know our traditional way of life as Native people was a very spiritual way of life. We didn't really have a word religion. Things weren't separated and categorized. I mean, we had very specific ceremonies at different parts of the year, that's what the entire community or village would do. So yes, there was specific ceremonies, but every day our way of life, whether we were going out fishing or going out to our gardens or just being around the home, we would say certain songs and prayers so that our young children would hear them. And before we would hunt and fish, we'd make a prayer with some tobacco or sage or cedar where I come from. And so things were very much on a spiritual foundation. And so to me, people are sick these days, not just the Native people, but many people throughout the world, because we are facing a sense of losing our spirit. Would you talk a little bit about that?
I came from a background, a very religious background, actually a Southern Baptist, if you can imagine that. My aunt, who raised us, she was the oldest of all my sisters. There was 11, I think 11 children in her family, and she was the oldest, and she was the one that could not have children. So all the other sisters and brothers went out and worked, and they were gone the majority of the time, and she was the one that raised us children, so we always called her Mama. But she, when people, the Baptist people started coming onto the reservations and started teaching their religion, the Southern Baptist religion, and building the churches, then she converted from, well, whatever, spirituality and stuff. I can't say that she converted from that, because she was a very spiritual person, but she went along with the teachers, with the teachings of the Southern Baptists, and she went to church, and also along with her she took us, so we all went into the churches and all up until, I mean, we was in church every Sunday morning, night, and Wednesday nights, or whenever the church doors were open, we were there. So I had a lot of religion, but I never felt like I had any spirituality until recent years when I, like I said, got into the recovery program, and then I found spirituality. I felt like I finally had a connection to my God, to my higher power, and it wasn't until then that I really, really felt that sense of connection. Even though I'd been in church all these years, you know, the God that I was learning about was one that would punish you if you did this or if you did that, you know. But my spirituality teaches me, the way I feel is that I don't have to be in a church, you know, to have a God. I don't, you know, wherever I'm at, spirituality is within me, and it's the connection that I have with my higher being, whatever it is, you know, whether it's a God up in heaven or whether it's the front door, it doesn't matter. If that's my spirituality, that's my connection, then, you know, that's me, you know, and I feel like everybody has their own, you know, whatever it happens to be. But, you know, we, like I said, you know, we grew up with that Southern Baptist religion, and it took a long time to find out that I didn't have to be in church in order to be spiritually connected with somebody or with a higher being. And today I'm just so grateful that I have that, because I can be in my own house, or I can be with my husband, or I can be by myself, and I have that spiritual connection today. And it's something that is just a, I don't know what the word is. I'm just overwhelmed most of the time when I just think of, you know, where I'm at, you know, I'm just so blessed with things in my life, and I know it you know, it's just
Great Spirit.
Mm-hmm. And I know I have that connection today. You know, I felt lost, and that's why I was out doing the things that I was doing, but I don't have to today because of, you know, where the way I feel. I feel so connected with everything today, you know. And I know that there are people out in our communities that are just so totally lost because they don't understand that there is a difference between spirituality and religion. You know, we do a wellness conference every year over in Marco Island. And one of the topics that we have is religion versus spirituality, because people think that if you're talking about being spiritual and things like this, you got to be in church, you know, and all that. But you don't, you know, you don't have to. There doesn't have to be a church building. There doesn't have to be a religion in order to be spiritual. And a lot of the non-native people think that only native people have that, you know, path to spirituality. You know, it's not us, you know, it's everywhere. It's within all of us. We just have to do that deep down searching and find it, because it's in all of us.
Yes.
You know, we just have to look for it and have that, you know, desire to want to find it, you know, and to be connected with something that is greater than we are, you know. And a lot of times there's a lot of us that have a hard time believing there is something greater than us, you know, because, you know, we're so egotistical today, you know. And that's it. And everything, you know, in ourselves so much, everything is so me, that we can't imagine something being higher than us, you know, more powerful than us, you know. So once I decided that, you know, I was going to make a change in my life and that things started changing, then I started feeling this connection. And, you know, I had to look and see what it was. And once I discovered that it's something within me, and this power that's beyond me that helps me get through all these things in my life, all these obstacles that I've, you know, was always there and I couldn't figure out how I was getting over them. It was because of the spiritual thing, you know, my God, my higher power that was there, that was always guiding me, and I didn't even know it, you know. And every time something wrong was happening, it was when I was going off and doing these things without my spirit, you know, without my spirituality, you know, without that connection. I was thinking, oh, I can do this on my own, and I'd go off and I'd get in trouble. And when I started finding my way back, it was back when I was saying, oh, God, please help me, you know, and, you know, help me find my way. And my spirituality, my spirit was always there to help me, you know, find my way. And finally, I discovered that spirituality that I had within me. And I tell you, today my life is wonderful. I have a beautiful life today, and I know it's all due to that, because, like I said, I had that religion.
Yes.
But it wasn't helping me at all. And today with the spirituality, I find I'm in a whole different space, you know, in a whole different place in myself. I have an understanding of myself a lot different than what I had before.
Thank you.
You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, on Global Community Radio, Radio for Peace International. The music we featured in today's program were September Moon by the Thunderbird Sisters off their CD, Still Singing. Next, a flute song entitled Father Sky, Mother Earth by Ed Windancer off his CD, Breath of My Soul. And finally, we heard an intertribal powwow song from the Kicking Woman Sisters. We hope you enjoyed as much as we did my conversation with Helene Buster. Yacht Kiddushi Native Center is very honored to have Andy and Helene as members of our organization's advisory council. We greatly appreciate their friendship as well. We again thank them for sharing their thoughts with us on Wolf Mountain Native Radio. Before we conclude today's program, I want to remind our listeners that Radio for Peace International and us here at Yacht Kiddushi Native Center welcome your comments regarding our broadcasts. You may write to Radio for Peace International by email at info@rfpi.org. Again, info@rfpi.org, or surface mail at Radio for Peace International, P.O. Box 88-6150, Santa Ana, Costa Rica. You may contact Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices by writing to Yacht Kiddushi Native Center, 1731 16th Avenue Northeast, Naples, Florida, 34120 USA. For more information on Radio for Peace International, please check out the station's website at www.rfpi.org. One special page of the website is RFPI's catalog of audio tapes available. My favorite selection is the audio series Belonging to Mother Earth, Indigenous Wisdom and Healing. Belonging to Mother Earth, Indigenous Wisdom and Healing are a set of interviews and plenary speeches of Native elders and traditional wisdom keepers from all over the world who gathered for a conference in Palau in 1998 that Radio for Peace International co-sponsored. The website also provides a complete program schedule and summary information on the wonderful programs we broadcast worldwide on shortwave and internet audio. I would like to encourage all the listeners to become members of Friends of Radio for Peace International to help keep Global Community Radio on the air. An individual annual membership is only $40 a year. A family membership is only $50 a year. Membership and any other financial donation will be greatly appreciated. Membership or contributions can be sent to RFPI's business office at Radio for Peace International, P.O. Box 1094, Eugene, Oregon, 97440 USA. We sincerely thank you. We now conclude our two-part visit with Andy and Helene Buster with the song Okeechobee Sand by Seminole band Cowbone, with Paul Buster, who played here today on the res for Andy's birthday gathering. Until the next Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, this is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Aho, Kinanwantakwasin, to all of our relations.
It was a long time ago, Seminoles made a stand against their odds and foes. Osceola said, my people will always be Florida Seminole. show me the game. Took the lives of our women and children. Trail of tears began. Seminole, Choctaw, Cherokees had no friends. Land of gold, Okeechobee's blue waters and Okeechobee's land. Okeechobee's blue waters and Okeechobee's land. Thank you.